stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick, and this week I'm joined by Kevin Matris, Zach's Vice President, Research Wizard Guru, editor of Zach's Options Trader Service, and the known permabull of Zach's to talk about this stock rally and what it might look like, not just a week or two from now. Nah, that's boring. We're going to talk about 5, 6, 7 years from now, way down the road.
It's all planned out.
Right. We're going to look into our crystal balls, if we have some, or our magic eight ball, and look to see what is going on. And, you know, I get asked these questions all the time. Aren't stocks too expensive right now? Aren't they too expensive? How could they go up from here? We're going to discuss all this, and we're going to discuss our top stock picks, too, that you might want to own 5 years from now. It's a long way out to think about owning a stock for that long. Most people don't. But Kevin and I took a few minutes and some time to figure out what we might want to own 5 years from now, because that's kind of an interesting question. So, Kevin, I called you a permabull because you've been bullish on stocks for a while around here at Zach's.
For 8 years, to be exact.
Okay, so even longer than I would have guessed. But you recently became, I can't believe I'm saying this, even more bullish.
Sure.
Believing that stocks could double again in, say, like, at, you know, 5 years or so.
Sure.
I kind of have a similar theory we discovered because I think we're in a secular bull market, which is similar to the doubling theory.
Right.
But I want to find out exactly what your theory is, and we're going to get into that, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about mine, and how do you think, with stocks already at the record, how do we go higher from here?
Well, first off, yes, I do think the market is going to double within the next 5 years, and the first thing I would say is that the market has already doubled twice within the last 8 years. In fact,
market...
over the last 8 years since this bull market began, is already up 255%. All of this has happened while the annual GDP rate has been growing at 1.48% per year. So people don't realize this.
Yeah.
That is below average growth. So even though the market has made a spectacular move, GDP has only been averaging 1.48% per year. If you were to look at just, let's say, the last 5 years alone, the last 5 years, we saw the S&P make a 100% return. So this idea that we could double within the next 5 years is not outrageous. We literally just did it while the growth rate has been very anemic at best.
So you're assuming, I'm taking it from where you're going, that we'll have a higher growth rate.
Sure. The reason why I think so is because Trump has a very pro-growth agenda. And the thing that everybody has been waiting for is the tax cuts, specifically the corporate tax cuts. He's talking about lowering corporate taxes from 35% to 15%. And when he does that, that is going to make the United States one of the most business-friendly countries in the world. You're going to see massive new corporate investment, and it is going to transform how companies do business in America. So many are now believing that once these tax rates get enacted, these tax cuts take place, that we could see GDP literally double from an average of 1.5% to 3%, maybe even more, 3.5% or 4%. So my contention is that if we have been able to double the S&P over the last 5 years, while the growth rate has been averaging 1.5%, it is not a stretch to think that the S&P can double again if the GDP rate doubles to 3% or more. And let me also say that if you were to double the S&P within 5 years, you would need to see a 14.9% average annual return. Being able to gain 14.9% per year is not a big deal, because that is exactly what the average annual S&P has been doing over the last 8 years.
Right.
So this is all very realistic. And let me also add one more thing. people think to themselves, oh, we've been going up 8 years.
Right.
How could we possibly continue this? I think the market has been re-energized with all of this tax cut talk. It is true that the bull market we are in right now is the second longest bull market in history, but the longest bull market is 12.3 years. And we did that between, you know, the 1987 and a little bit after 2000. It's a 12.3 year, that's the longest bull market ever. During that stretch, we gained 582%. So if we are only 8 years into this bull market, my five-year doubling thesis fits very nicely into the 12.3-year record because that's 4.3 years away, and I think we're going to continue. It's not going to stop at 12.3 years. And the largest move we've seen with a bull market has been 582%. We're a fraction of that. We're only at 255%. So from historical standards, we are nowhere near the records that we had set prior to this.
So I'm assuming with this rise in the GDP that, you know, obviously earnings would be rising as well. So you don't have a problem with valuations if stocks continue to rise then, because the earnings should also continue to rise.
Correct. First off, I think the PE ratio right now using the forward 12-month earnings is right around 18.5, if I'm not mistaken. One thing that I should say, though, to set the stage is that over the last 8 years, the average EPS growth rate for the S&P has been 7.5%. So while I believe GDP is going to double, instead of saying that EPS growth rates are going to double, let's just say that the EPS growth rate just goes up by 50%. Again, I'm still expecting the GDP to double, but if earnings just grow by 50% more, that goes from a 7.5% average growth rate, which is what we've been seeing, up to 11.25%. So if let's just say that EPS growth grew by 11.25% year after year after year for 5 years, over the course of 5 years, that's a 72% total compounded growth. If let's just say that the S&P during that time increased by 14.9% over the next 5 years, that over 5 years would mean a 100% return. But that would only put the PE ratio for the S&P at 21.5. 21.5 PE at a 3% growth rate, you know, 3% GDP is not such a big deal. If the PE ratio was 21.5 while we were struggling to be able to print out 1.5% GDP, that could be a little rich. But a 21.5 PE at a 3+% GDP rate, that does not sound rich at all.
Okay. I know some people out there are probably thinking, well, what happens if we don't get the tax cuts? That kind of goes into my theory. I'm also bullish, as I said earlier, but I believe we're in a secular bull market.
I agree.
So I don't think we have as much problems with whether or not we get the tax cuts, because I already believe that the economy is heating up even before any of this ever passes.
Sure.
Helped by the animal spirits we've seen the last couple of months, for sure. But we're at, you know, close to the full employment. That's generating some good things here. And housing is good, and other, you know, manufacturing made it through the recession last year. They had a manufacturing recession. They've rebounded very strongly,
right,
in fact. So I feel like we don't necessarily even need the tax cuts, even though we might get them, to go up to the next level. I also think in the secular bull that it didn't start until 2013. So going to your point about the longest bull markets and all of that, that we're not that far into this one and we have more time to go. On my view, we have even longer than 4 or 5 more years we have.
Right.
Possibly if the longest is 12 years, as you were saying, which, you know, is pretty long. And this, I consider this to only be the fourth year of a secular bull, then that we could have 8 more years. And I do get a lot of the same questions, like that can't be, you know, we can't go on that long. But the last secular bull was that 1982 to 2000.
Right.
You started the bull market for those years after the sell-off in 87, because
right,
that was real dramatic. So some people do, but as a secular bull, it lasted those whole 18 years.
Right.
And the nominal real return for the S&P during that whole time period was 15.4. So it's not hard to believe we will do that again. People who believe the secular bull and bear theories believe in these cycles, and that we just had one of the longer bear markets, actually, from 2000 to 2013
right.
that we've seen. So that, interestingly, the actual returns of the S&P, the average, was a loss of 1% over that time period, even with the rebound off of those lows in right. 2009. So, yeah, but we get into the same place, whether or not you believe this is the fourth year or this is the eighth or ninth year of this bull. I definitely also believe that we're going to have, you know, numerous more years of good market returns.
Yeah, let me say, I don't think that once we double again, that, you know, this market is going to stop in 4 or 5 years. I'm just saying that we are positioned to at least double within the next 4 or 5 years. But then I think the market continues to carry on. I mean, there has to be a reason for the market to stop moving higher. There has to be a reason to go into a recession.
Right.
And none of those things are credibly on the table at the moment. And the only thing that somebody could point to is that, oh, the Fed is now starting to ratchet up interest rates. But the Fed funds rate is at between 0.75 and 1%. In recent history, in modern history, I don't believe there has ever been a recession with the Fed's funds rate below 5%. In the last three recessions, I believe the Fed funds rate was above 5% prior to a recession hitting. So even if the Fed were to increase rates by a quarter point three times per year, over the next 5 years, you still wouldn't be at 5% Fed right. funds rate. And the only reason why the Fed would continue to increase interest rates in an effort to slow down the economy is because growth would be chugging along at such a fast and furious pace, they are desperately trying to slow it down. But while the economy is growing at such a fast and furious pace, that is going to increase earnings, and that is what's going to be sending the market significantly higher. So this idea that, oh, we can't go any higher, or we, you know, there could be a recession on the table, I don't see any of those things manifesting in any time soon. Who knows what the future is going to bring, but I totally subscribe to your idea that we are in the beginning of a secular bull. And I think that that we have some extremely exciting times ahead of us.
Yeah, there were two recessions in the last secular bull as well that didn't stop the bull. But you do right. get pullbacks. I mean, we shouldn't be sitting here like, oh, the good times, it's going to go straight up forever. I always caution people, like, you know, trees don't grow to the sky, neither right. do stocks. So you will have pullbacks. And we've seen it over the last 8 years, for sure.
Sure.
And we will see them in the future. So that's something I feel people need to keep in mind, too, that you might even get a 20% pullback somewhere in there, 15 to 20.
Yeah, I mean, perfect example is in the middle of 2015 to the very beginning of 2016,
yeah.
from the very highs of 2015 to the depths of, I think, February of 2016,
yeah,
we pulled
ago.
Back by around 15%.
Yes.
Now, at that point, a lot of people were like, oh, here it comes.
You're right. The doom
this is
on.
The bear. We're going to have a recession.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is that when you look at a long-term chart, the market literally just pulled back and hit that long-term trend line that could be drawn from March of 2009 that has been supporting this bull market ever since. So when we did see the market make that 15% pullback, which, by the way, is 5% shy of a technical bear market,
right.
all we did was come back to hit that trend line. Then the market bounced off there furiously, and we have been going higher ever since. So yes, there can be periods of pain, but I don't see a official bear market manifesting anytime soon. I think that we won't see that for at least 5 years. And of course, I don't see a recession. You know, people were worried that we were going to be seeing a recession last year when the market came down.
Right.
What's interesting is that we did have an earnings recession, right? There was five
yes.
quarters there where we saw negative EPS growth, but that never manifested into economic contraction
no.
because the GDP still managed to show a print of, I think, 0.8 and then 1%.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think we avoid a recession for the next 5 years. We avoid a bear market for the next 5 years. I think we double within the next 5 years. And then after that, I think we keep on going.
Okay. So you would be a buyer on any dips then?
Yes, I would be a buyer on moves up. I'd be a buyer on moves down. I would be a big buyer of stocks.
Okay, so it's not too late if you're not already a stock owner right. to get in.
And the one thing I would say too, I would say, think about the last 5 years and think to yourself, what if you knew or if you thought strongly that the market 5 years ago was literally going to make a 100% return? Would you have invested a little bit differently? Would you have been a little bit more aggressive? Would you right. have not gotten spooked out of the market every time it made maybe a 5% pullback? What would you have done differently if you thought the market 5 years ago was going to go up 100%? Would you do things in any different way? This is an opportunity to be able to do what you only wished you could have done 5 years ago. This can be transformative for somebody's portfolio.
Yeah.
I would be aggressive. I would be smartly aggressive, but I would be a big buyer.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I always look back at the people who missed out the 1982 to 2000, even, you know, almost right up to the end, they missed out.
Right.
And now it's another chance, I feel, for those people who might have, you know, messed up their last try. And that was hard to mess up that one, but right. some people still did.
Right.
So here we are again in possibly what I believe is another secular bull. So, okay. So let's talk about individual stocks and what ones, you know, we might wake up 5 years from now and want to have in our portfolio and wouldn't be freaked out. Now, for me, when I was considering this idea, I didn't really look at any small caps because I just feel like I can't really know what's going to happen with most of them going on 5 years from now. So I was right. biased towards at least mid to big cap stocks.
Right.
Was that true with you when you were thinking about it?
What's interesting is that even though I do have this long-term view of what's going to happen with the market over 5 years, when I pick stocks, I don't necessarily have that big of a time span. Of course, I want to make sure that when I get into a stock, I'm not stepping on a landmine right away.
Right.
So when I'm getting into a stock, I'm looking for this stock to immediately go in my favor, but I also have a relatively longer point of view. And usually my point of view would be maybe 1 year or more.
Okay.
The stocks that I'll talk about today, though, I think they have tremendous upside potential that could extend way beyond just 1 year. But the one thing I do want to say about small caps have been kind of an underperformer over the last couple of years. Usually they are the ones that show the greatest amount of growth.
Right.
But I believe if we do see these tax cuts, I believe it is going to have an exceptionally beneficial impact on small cap companies where access to capital isn't as prevalent as it is for large cap companies. And I think this is going to benefit them tremendously. I would definitely look at small caps as these things come to fruition.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I'm definitely a big fan of the small caps. And you can buy ETFs in order to get, you know, bigger small cap exposure if
sure.
you don't want to go company by company. So that's an option too.
I know there is 2 and 3 times ETFs. I never really did
a lot
of those things.
That's a little crazy.
If I was looking at just a small cap play, I would probably just be looking at the Russell 2000 small cap
right.
ETF, which
that's
is
right.
IWM.
Right.
It's dollar for dollar,
yes.
but you're making a bet on that that class. And I think that that's a
right.
fine way to go. If you're super aggressive, you may want to look at those multiples, but I think a dollar for dollar is good. But I think if you use the Zacks Rank and the style scores, you can find small cap stocks individually that are going to do way better than the index.
Sure. Yeah. But it's a little harder to pick those going out 5 years, I feel.
Sure.
For something like what we're doing. But yes,
yeah.
I mean, I definitely use the Zacks Rank and all of that to
right.
find the small caps.
Well, for instance, so one of my stocks is Wabco. So that isn't necessarily a small cap, but I'm not necessarily looking at a 5-year outlook. So I do believe that this definitely could benefit over the course of the next 5 years, but I think that between now and, let's say, the next 6 months to a year, we could be looking at, you know, huge outsized gains.
Now, what do they do again? Are they the...
Wabco, I mean, the company's name is Wabco, it's ticker WBC, and they are the world's leading supplier of commercial vehicle technologies. And this includes like electronic braking, stability, suspension, this kind of stuff. I also heard that their technologies are used in luxury cars and sport utility vehicles as well, but it's primarily for commercial vehicles. And by the way,
are they a driverless car play too, possibly?
I don't think so. By the way, I'm down on that technology.
Oh,
that's for another podcast. That is one of the most ridiculous things, but we'll save that.
Okay.
And by the way, as long as we're talking about ridiculousness, I think Snapchat is a fantastic stock. Too short, but that's also for another podcast.
Okay.
But anyways, WABCO, I like this. It goes into this whole idea that if the economy is expanding, commercial vehicles are going to, you're going to see companies upgrading their fleets and all of this stuff. But the reason why I like them is their industry is ranked in the top 12% of Zacks ranked industries. So that already gives them an unfair advantage. Their sector is ranked in the top 6% of Zacks ranked sectors. So again, a very healthy advantage. Their trailing 12-month sales and earnings are at record highs. And their projected sales and earnings are also outpacing their industry. For this one, though, I like it because I am a technician and I look at their chart. And what they have is they have an unmistakable head and shoulders pattern on their chart. The reason why this is so interesting is because a head and shoulders pattern is typically a bearish pattern. But there is something known as a head and shoulders failure. And a head and shoulders failure is wildly bullish. And when that bearish pattern fails, it normally explodes to the upside. So I would challenge somebody who's listening to this podcast to pull up a chart, take a look at that formation. The head and shoulders is unmistakable. And what you do to figure out what the price move can be is you want to measure the distance between the top of the head and the neckline. You would draw a line between the bottom of the left shoulder and the right shoulder. Very easy pattern. If you have questions, you can always email me. But but you measure the size of the pattern, and then you add that distance to the breakout of the right shoulder. To put it all into summary is that projects right now a move to $163. Right now we're at, I think we're at 117 or 118, something like that. That projects a move to 163. And I believe that that will be over a 40% return between now and probably the next 6 months. So fundamentally, the stock looks phenomenal. Technically, I couldn't be more excited. And even though I think that this will be a fantastic five-year play, the prospect of being able to pick up a 40% return over the course of the next 6 months, when I'm only expecting the S&P to gain 10%, 40% return is a pretty attractive play.
Okay, I'm going to give one of my picks. I didn't look at any charts because I'm not the technician. So I did just look at fundamentals and consider what will be around in 5 years and who will be still, you know, crushing it.
Okay.
And my first pick is the Google, the Alphabet. I'm not a big Fang fan, really, but when I was considering this, I was turning to all the Fang stocks. So I've changed my mind. I'm totally loving the Fang now. And Google, I like it because of YouTube. I've always kind of dissed it. Oh, the advertising.
Right.
Yeah, they make billions from it. I know. But the YouTube is just killing it. And I really like what they're doing with it. YouTube's only 12 years old. And I just heard today that...
That's it?
Yeah, they were founded
in 2005. It seems like it grew up with it, right?
I know.
Yeah, it's been around forever.
I know. And as it's being, you know, uploaded onto everybody's smart TVs now, and it's on everybody's phone, it's just become a huge revenue generator. And I saw the somebody from management from WWE, the wrestling company, on CNBC. And he was talking about how they're the number one sports network on YouTube now. It's one of their channels on there. They have YouTube, they have cable television, then they have their subscription service. But the content on YouTube is free, obviously. They have 13 billion videos viewed.
WWE?
Yes.
Or you mean...
Yes. WWE has 13 billion views on there.
Wow.
So you can imagine like the possibilities going forward for like a lot of these big companies to be uploading their content on there. And then YouTube itself is starting to turn more towards a subscription service as well. So it won't always be free, but that is becoming accepted by consumers. So I really like the YouTube aspect of it. They're Google in general, the Alphabet, revenue growth of 18% this year expected and another 15% next year. And this is a company that was founded in 1998 now.
Right.
So it'll be about 20 years old by next year.
Right.
And to still be generating close to 20% revenue growth is just incredible.
Yeah, they have so many untapped areas that they can monetize. So I totally agree. By the way, when we were talking about stocks, I have another one I'm going to share. But, you know, I mean, you and I talked about movies before. You know, I believe that Netflix is going to just continue to keep on skyrocketing.
That is a fang.
A lot of people think, oh, how can that keep going up? Well, how can Google keep going up? How can Facebook keep going up? Netflix, that is, it's a paradigm change. This is how people are going to be getting their content. That's something not only for the next 5 years, I think that's something that you just buy and hold. And when you finally retire in 10, 20 years, you know, you bequeath that to your kids. That's something that's just going to keep going up, in my opinion. But anyways.
Well, we did disagree on that in the last podcast, but I have been investigating more about what Netflix is doing since that podcast.
Right.
And I am coming more around to your view because I really do like what they're doing internationally with their various platforms. That Narcos series was super profitable for them.
Right.
And then they're rolling out a new one that they shot only in Mexico for the Latino market. They have big high hopes for that one.
Right.
You know, they're into India now and they're creating new content for the Indian market. So yes, I do feel like they are on the right track. They know what they're doing.
Oh, with all the new content they're generating. Yeah. I mean, it's just spectacular. But anyway, so...
Okay, so what's your second?
So here's another one. So this one I think is fantastic for the short term. It's also great for the long term as well. And this is the CME Group right here in Chicago, ticker CME. And they are the biggest and most diverse commodity exchange in the world. And they are the parent company to the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the CME's Globex, the Chicago Board of Trade, New York Mercantile Exchange, all these others. And they have a big product mix. It ranges from index futures to agriculture to metals, energy, you name it, they have their hand in it. What's interesting is that they have shown double-digit EPS growth for each year over the last 3 years straight. And looking out over the next 12 months, they're projecting another double-digit projected growth rate. I believe they're looking at like 11.5% or 11.6% over the next 12 months. What I like best about them, though, is their trading volumes. They continue to set volume records. And what's interesting is that they were setting trading volume records when inflation was low and commodity prices were tanking. But now with inflation picking up and commodity prices on the rise, not to mention increased speculation around currencies, around interest rates, and with the market as a whole, I'm expecting the trading volumes at the CME to continue to set record gains. And I think that is going to mean fantastic things for revenue as well as earnings. Simply put, exchanges are big business, and I think it's only going to get better. When I take a look at my price charts and price targets, I think that the CME, probably over the course of the next handful of months, I think that we can get to $150. That would be about a 27% gain. But if you were to take a look at the all-time highs of CME, all-time highs come in at about $250, $251. I believe that that as trading volumes pick up, I don't see any reason why we couldn't see the CME challenge those prices. That would be a 100% return. And I think that as the economy grows and inflation picks up and speculation continues to increase, I think this is one that's going to continue to go on for years and years and years and years. So this is definitely not only a good short-term pick, I think this goes well beyond 5 years.
Okay. That's an interesting one. Most people probably wouldn't think of looking in that area. So that's interesting. I have one. I included a bank because I do feel like this is going to be, the decade for the banks.
I agree.
If we see these interest rates continue to rise, it goes right to the bottom line of these guys, and their earnings are going to soar.
Right.
And they've been really beaten down. They did have a rally last year in 2016. They've kind of pulled back a bit here in 2017, but I think this is a long-term play. So the one that I like is called PacWest Bancorp. Their ticker is PACW. They're basically California-based. They have one branch in like North Carolina for some strange reason. I don't know why. I need to investigate that one. But it is a play on banks, financials, and California. I do believe, you know, the sun or the Golden State is still going to be driving the economy. It's got all these big FANG companies are out there out west. And, you know, their economy, when it does well, the banks out there will do well. This one pays a dividend of 3.9%, which is
That's a little good.
On the high side. Yeah. So it's about a mid cap, $6 billion market cap right now. I think they have something like 70 branches out there, but they do all the normal banking, commercial, you know, lending and all of that. So I like it because it's California focused, but there's numerous other banks you could be in. You could be in some of the big guys, some of the other regionals. Could be, I like the community banks, but it's hard to pick just one.
But when California secedes from the United States, what's going to happen to PacWest? Or do you not see that?
It'll have Google, so it won't care.
They'll move all their branches in North Carolina.
Maybe. And then I just have one more since we've been talking about the FANG. And this is California, too, which is Facebook, which most people know I've disliked for many years.
Right.
I do own it in my personal portfolio because I've finally decided buy what you hate. And like I was just hate using Facebook, but yes, but I love Instagram. Like I bought it for Instagram a couple of years ago because my niece and a lot of other younger people who are Generation Z now, were all using Instagram. And I just really thought there was a lot of possibilities with Instagram, kind of like the YouTube with Google. And that is turning out to be the case. There's some really interesting stats that are coming out with Instagram. So they've over the last 6 months, added another 100 million users. So they now have 600 million users on Instagram. 400 million are on the site every day.
Right.
They've just announced that they've reached 1 million active advertisers. And that's up from 500,000 just 6 months ago. So literally within 6 months, they've doubled. To compare, I think Twitter has like 150,000 advertisers. So to go, you know, 150, 1 million. Well, we know who's crushing it. Right. And then they rolled out the Instagram stories a couple months ago to compete with Snapchat. That has
which
been,
is dumb.
Yes. That's also been doing really well and is competing with Snapchat, I have to say. And businesses like the Instagram stories, you know, that's the video thing. They've been over there using it. Some are even using it in their advertising now.
Really?
Yes. And now Facebook itself is rolling out Facebook stories this week that we're recording this podcast. So they're also going to be offering this. Revenue growth this year of 37%. You know, revenue expected again, close to 30 again for next year. They're a little bit higher growth than Alphabet right now.
Right.
But I do have to say I'm not getting in their way.
Yeah, that's one of those stocks where you just want to buy and you just hang on to it. You know, you don't want to not be in that stock.
Right.
The real quick though on Snapchat and Instagram, the stories. So for Instagram starting to incorporate stories, that's a good move. I know they have stories on Snapchat, but the demographics, I don't think the people who use Snapchat regularly even care about those stories. They're too busy making funny faces and sending it to their friends.
Right.
Are they reading the stories?
I don't know. It is a little bit different demographic. That's why the businesses are adopting Instagram stories much more than they are over on Snapchat.
Right.
And it is slightly older population, I think, that is on the Instagram. Those are the millennials and not the Generation Z people that are on the Snapchat. So I do feel like it could crush down Snapchat here.
You know,
sorry,
again,
Snapchat.
Yeah, I don't want to pile on Snapchat. And maybe just because I'm old, I don't get it. But
the oldies,
it just seems childish and juvenile, and I don't see how they're going to be able to adequately monetize it because the people who use it skew extremely young.
Right.
Instagram, I get to a degree. I totally understand Facebook. And whether you want to, you know, keep in touch with all of your friends, I think there's a lot of people like me who just like identifying their favorite pages, their news outlets, and having all of that come in an RSS feed. So everything I'm interested in is just coming into my platform. It's very easy for me to stay on top of all of the things that I am interested in. And that I think is why people are so excited. And when they serve you ads, these ads are not just random nonsense. It's catered to interests that you have obviously identified yourself as having. So I actually find myself clicking on more ads than I ever would if I am online on a PC, because these are things that I clearly have an interest in. They are doing something right, and they're going to continue to do something right, and they just have so many ways to monetize their subscriber base. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
kudos to Facebook. Good for Instagram. Snapchat, yeah. I think, is going to die soon.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Okay, so let's recap all the tickers that we gave for the ones that we are looking at 5 years out would be, and for now, Facebook, FB, Alphabet, which is G-O-O-G-L, PacWest Bancorp, P-A-C-W.
Do Netflix, even though we barely talked about it.
I'll put that one in there. Netflix, N-F-L-X is their ticker. CME Group is CME. Wabco is WBC. And then we did talk about Snap.
But that's a sell.
That's S-N-A-P.
For me.
And if you want to do just the general small caps, we talked about the Russell 2000. You can buy that in the IWM ETF. So I think that covers pretty much what we discussed, and you know, some good ideas here and something to keep in mind, especially when we do get a pullback, which we will get in these stocks. You might want to come back and listen to this podcast to feel energized again to dive in when there's opportunities. So,
by the way, let me say one last thing. Okay. I wrote an article on the S&P doubling over the next 5 years. So get on Zacks and do a search for it. It is...
Was it available to the public, or is it...
Should be...
Or is it Zacks Confidential, or is it...
Well, let me see.
you might have to be in Zacks Confidential to get that.
I think it was in a Weekend Wisdom, too.
Okay.
So, but it's one of the most important articles...
I'll try to link to it.
One of the most important articles you will read this year.
Wow.
Read it. It will change how you invest over the course of the next 1 to 5 years.
Okay.
And it'll transform your portfolio.
Wow. All right. I'd look for anything that's transformative.
Good. For the better.
Yes, hopefully. Okay, so be sure to check that out. I will try to link to it in the article, and you can find out all of our other podcasts on iTunes. We have a couple of those movie ones over there. You might want to check those out. We did the options. We haven't had Kevin back yet to talk about the more crazy options. What was that? It wasn't the Iron Condor. What were the advanced options?
Oh, the, well, yeah, the
Iron Condor. Is that Iron Condor? Okay,
yeah,
we're going to do the Iron Condor soon.
Right.
Because that was really helpful. We just did the beginner options podcast before, which was good for those of us who know nothing. But we're going to do more advanced kind of options trades the next time. So be sure to check those out. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud. They got funding now. You can go over there. They're not going to go under. So you can subscribe to us there and get all the podcasts. So when those options ones come out, you can get them right away. And you can also get the Value Investor podcast over on SoundCloud if you subscribe over there. But also on iTunes, we're for both of the podcasts over on iTunes. So get us any of these places, and I'll see you again next week.